With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
This is John Middlecoff from 3 and Out with John Middlecoff. Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Fantasy coaches, and welcome to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Sylvester. And by my side is producer JP Gale. We'll be joined today by Jeff Ratcliffe of ProFootballFocus.com. There's been a ton of new news in the last 2 days, so we're going to cover that briefly, then chat about Jeff's Week 3 rankings, answer questions from the listener mailbag, talk about start-sit scenarios, then make our predictions for the top performers of the week. Before we begin, if you haven't already, make sure to upload your team to My Playbook. We do it through all kinds of sites. It takes about 10 seconds. Then you have loads of analysis from your league right at your fingertips, and a team of advisors in your back pocket. The link is at the top left of the Fantasy Pros homepage. All right, let's get to the fantasy football news now. Hi, Jeff. Thanks for joining us.
Happy to come on, man.
So AP decided to undergo surgery. He's going to miss 4 to 6 weeks, like we talked about on the Monday show. But Jeff, are you buying McKinnon as being a reliable RB2, or are there some hesitations there?
Well, I think there's definitely some hesitations. I mean, we know athletically this kid is completely off the charts, but we've also seen that in the past when Peterson has missed time for various reasons, they've gone to Matt Asiata as well out of the backfield. And, you know, I know a lot of people out there are kind of weighing their options, especially if their waiver wire run is a Wednesday evening waiver wire run. And they're looking at Asiata as a guy who possibly they could pick up. I'm not really going that route either, because he's got a very limited upside. But McKinnon has that ceiling. The problem is, if I had to project this right now, you're almost looking, if it was just those two in the backfield, at a sort of 55-45 split. Of course, it isn't just those two in the backfield. Ronnie Hillman now in the mix as well. So this is going to be an interesting breakdown between these guys, but I can't endorse McKinnon as an RB2 just yet.
Is this the type of thing where if McKinnon performs well, he could end up getting 80% of these carries?
I wouldn't see him getting 80%. No, maybe 70% would be an absolute best case scenario, but 80% that's a really high number. Yeah. I mean, that's like D'Angelo Williams territory.
Now, we know that, you know, I look at Jerick McKinnon and his body reminds me a lot of Amir Abdullah, who's also hurt. He just doesn't seem like a guy who's really going to be able to hold up to getting 20 hits a game. So, you know, I think you're right. I think that his touches are limited. And as much as I'd love to see McKinnon get fed the ball a ton, you can't go and spend a ton of your free agent budget money on a guy who's only going to get, I don't know what, 13, 14 touches. That's kind of optimistic too, right?
Yeah, I think that's about where you would look at. Around about that range. Floor of probably 8, 9, 10. Ceiling of probably 16, 17. But yeah, that's probably where I'd have McKinnon.
Now, we touched on Amir Abdullah. He's headed to the IR, we just heard this morning. Is Dwayne Washington ready for a big role, or is he just kind of be part of a package that they put together in that Detroit backfield?
Well, I think we have to be careful about what we call a big role. I mean, big role for Dwayne Washington entering the season? Yeah, absolutely. I think he's already exceeded that. But you look at it, there's a potential there. He's got a lot of intangibles and a lot of things that you like. You know, he's big. He's 6'1", 6'2", depending on your source, 220, runs 4.4, can catch the ball out of the backfield. In fact, has more of a scat back profile than I think a lot of people realize, despite his size. The thing about him, what ultimately kind of caused him to slip and go undrafted was the fact that he really had that limited resume at the collegiate level. He went to Washington, which keeps things nice and easy for us, but he didn't rack up a ton of the touches at Washington. He was really efficient on his touches, and he has some really intriguing potential. Actually, he was a round 7 pick. I misspoke about undrafted, but it still slipped. And you know, he's got potential, and he's a guy who I've actually talked about throughout the course of the process as a guy, you know, all the way back to April, who's really intriguing. Now he's in a spot where I don't buy Theo Riddick as a between the tackles grinder at all. So he would fit that role. Plus, Zenner's going to get some carries now, which I guess is good for the Zenner truthers out there.
There we go. But that's what I like to hear.
But, you know, the problem is he backslid, and Washington is a very talented player. So, you know, there's some value to be had with Zenner, I guess, at this point in deep leagues. But I'm intrigued by Washington. I picked him up in a bunch of leagues, sort of zigging while other people were zagging for people or for players like McKinnon, et cetera. And, you know, at this point, ranking him today, I have him right around 40. And so he's outside the RB3s looking in. But he could very well this time next week be a part of that conversation.
Now, another player that was just shut down for a while, and this really hurts because I was so big on Dante Moncrief. He has a broken shoulder blade. He's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. How does this make you feel about Philip Dorsett?
Well, you know, there was a point in the preseason we had analysts at Pro Football Focus out at all the different training camps, and they were out in Indianapolis, and one of our analysts said, you know, there's a bigger difference between T.Y. Hilton and Dante Moncrief than Dante Moncrief and Philip Dorsett. So, you know, that's obviously a good thing. And another good thing is that Andrew Luck is right now leading the league in dropbacks. Him and Blake Bortles are right up there, just dropping back to pass in an insane amount. But, you know, I'm just not crazy about Andrew Luck's play. I know that's not going to win me a lot of fans, but he's still holding the ball a little bit too long. Looks like he's indecisive. Now, it maybe is a product to him, or maybe it is a product to the receivers. I'm not smart enough to know that. But, you know, you look at Dorsett, he's got the upside certainly to profile in that wide receiver 2 territory, but I'm not willing to put him there just yet. It's really rough too, because Moncrief was off to a somewhat decent start. Could have been something there early on in the season, but good thing is that, like you said, it's not a season ender.
Now, there's a few quick ones that we're not even going to comment on. I'll just mention them. Jerry Jones says Zeke Elliott's not going to lose carries because of the fumbles. So everyone can just cool their jets on the Alfred Morris talk. I was really hoping Elliott wouldn't lose picks because I've been hyping him up. I think he's still, you know, one of the elite backs in the league and could end up being the RB1 by the end of the season. He hasn't looked like that yet, but, you know, they've faced the Giants defense and he got stuffed real quick. Doug Martin's going to miss 3 weeks. We already had an idea that was going to happen, but now it's confirmed. And then finally, Jay Cutler. He's probably going to be out a few weeks with a thumb ligament issue. Not really a fantasy relevant story, but, you know, worth mentioning so you can consider how that might affect Alshon Jeffrey. But the big news this morning is that Josh Gordon had a warrant issued for his arrest. Now, it's not drug related. It has to do with a paternity case. But do you think that people should drop him? Should they hurry up and drop him and go find somebody else? Or should we wait a few more days to find out here, Jeff?
Well, if you've held him this long, you might as well keep him on your roster. I don't think that's the reason to drop him. I think Cody Kessler being under center might be the reason to drop him. It's going to be a big problem if that ultimately is what pans out here. And it looks like that's the way that things are trending. And Miami was obviously one of the most added defenses this week for that reason. It's not ideal. It doesn't help Josh Gordon's case, but I think that at this point we just kind of you know, let all the news come out before overreacting. And definitely, I mean, this is the era of hot takes, but you know, if this is something that people are running out and posting their thoughts on Twitter, we don't want to hear your thoughts. Keep your thoughts to yourself, because your thoughts are typically overreactions. And you know, at this point, it's not time to overreact to anything. Let's just leave it as it is. See how things play out. And because if he does get on the field, even with Kessler, he can be still productive. He showed that in the preseason. It doesn't really matter who's going to be at quarterback. He's been productive before. So I think you just hang on to him. Don't overreact at this point.
I think that's a great way to put it. I've already got two emails since the news came out like an hour and a half ago. And I just want to respond to these people. Like, what is it going to hurt to wait 2 days? Like, you were using that roster spot anyway. Just hold on to the guy. I mean, if he does come back, Even with Kessler, he's startable, right? And, you know, if Kessler isn't in that long, if McCown comes back, I'm not sure how long that's going to be, but if McCown comes back, he could be a reliable wide receiver too. So I don't understand the rush in dropping a guy when we don't know anything. But all right, Jeff, here's what we're going to do now. We're going to compare your rankings to the expert consensus rankings for week 3. And we're going to start at the quarterback position. So let's talk about people who are kind of on the borderline, you know, not in the top 7 because everyone's starting those guys, but, you know, 8 to 20 or whatever it may be. Who's a guy that you have ranked higher than ECR rankings?
I guess I'm pretty conservative when it comes to rankings overall. So, you know, I might be relatively close to ECR on a lot of players, but guys who sort of stand out, I think Ryan Tannehill is probably, you know, maybe the biggest guy for me who stands out. And I'm not that far away from the consensus, but I am a little higher. I have Tannehill coming in at 10 this week. And, you know, largely, or actually 9, that is. Largely, that is a product of that matchup against its secondary that performed poorly against Carson Wentz in week 1. Had Eagles fans really fired up about that. And then obviously given up a relatively big day to Joe Flacco as well. We saw Ryan Tannehill hasn't played particularly well this year, but he played good in garbage time and, you know, could take advantage of a good situation there. So he might be a guy who would stand out to me, and he's a guy who I'm going to be looking at a little bit for DFS this week.
I can definitely see that with the matchup. My concern about Tannehill, though, is that positive game script. I mean, if they're up big, how's it going to work out? Are they going to keep throwing the ball in the second half, or are they just going to pound it with you know, and see what they have in their backfield now that Foster's probably going to be out?
Yeah, that's the problem, I think. I don't know if you're going to be able to really pound it with Jay Ajayi and Kenyon Drake. So for me, I think that's what at least and Miami's defense, it has enough deficiencies that somehow they might be able to keep Cleveland in this game. You know, there's upside certainly for fantasy purposes. Because you're really looking for touchdowns there. You're not, you know, it doesn't really matter if they give up 28 points. And the way that Cleveland has been running the ball, at least, that bodes positively for them. So, you know, I'm not really overly concerned about that. But then again, you know, that's why I don't have him ranked up like in Matt Ryan territory, for example, who, you know, Matt Ryan this week is a guy who, he, you know, I guess I have a little bit of worry that he could be this week's Eli Manning, and not that Eli Manning even had a bad game. It's just he didn't throw for a touchdown pass in that, and a lot of people got let down by it. But, you know, so back end quarterback one, a streamer for sure. You know, maybe Dak Prescott is another guy who's a streamer, and I'm not that much higher, but I'm a little bit higher than consensus. I have him coming in at 15 this week. This is the week where he throws a touchdown pass for the first time. And, you know, another good game last week, just didn't throw that touchdown pass, ended up running for one. But against his Bears defense, again, another team that made Carson Wentz look better than what he probably really is. And don't get me wrong, I like Carson Wentz, but he played 2 really bad defenses to start his career. So that's a good way to get some confidence. And, you know, it's going to be a little bit of a tougher matchup this week for him, and it'll continue to be tough at various points this season.
You know, regarding Tannehill, something else with game script is, if they're going to have that big positive game script, you have to score points to get there, right? And who's going to put up those points? It's probably going to be Ryan Tannehill. So, you know, sometimes people can overreact to game script, and I've been guilty from that, you know, just off my gut. But when you really sit down and think about it, Tannehill is very likely to have a productive game against the Cleveland Browns. Now, you mentioned Dak Prescott, and he's the guy that I wanted to talk about. Because that Chicago Bears defense, they're missing some key pieces in their secondary. Not that they really had anything to begin with, but you know that secondary is absolutely torn up. They're trusting Dak Prescott. He's been passing the ball a ton. I think Dez is going to have a big week, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit later. But, you know, I have Dak Prescott number 12 this week, all the way up from number 18 in ECR. I'm a big believer this week. The other guy for me is Russell Wilson. He's sitting there at number 12 for ECR, and I get it. They were terrible against the Rams, who have their number. He's dealing with that ankle injury, but they're playing the San Francisco 49ers, and he's one of the top four or five quarterbacks without question in the NFL. So against the 49ers, I don't know how you can have him out of your top 10.
Yeah, I overlooked that one too. I actually have him as three. I didn't even think to look at him, to be honest with you, because I thought he would have been already, or would have been a lot higher there. I obviously some concerns with him, a little bit of the mobility last week, but I think honestly that's going to be in the rear view. A little bit of issue with the passing game. I mean, it's a pretty basic offense. A lot of people don't necessarily realize that, and they caught fire down the stretch last year, but we're really seeing them come back to what they really are offensively. But that being said, Wilson still has an enormous fantasy ceiling, and yeah, he's pretty much locked in as a top five. And I do get these questions from time to time, and I know when people want to overthink matchups, like say you picked up Matt Ryan and you have Russell Wilson. Should I start Matt Ryan over Russell Wilson? Well, why the heck did you draft Russell Wilson as early as you did if you're going to do this to yourself?
I know.
You made the bed, lie in it, and start Russell Wilson.
I completely agree. I've been getting so many of those emails and they're driving me nuts. I mean, I understand you're really worried about your fantasy team, but it's Russell Wilson, people. It's Russell Wilson. Somebody asked me today if they should bench AJ Green. Bench AJ Green? Are you kidding me? No, just if you drafted a guy in the first or second or third round, there's really no matchup they should be benched in unless there's an injury concern. Let's talk about a quarterback that we're low on. For me, I'll start Ben Roethlisberger. It's an away game. We know that he's famously bad in away games. Well, not bad, but really not QB1 worthy. And he's going against the Eagles. So I think Pittsburgh's going to run the ball a ton against this horrible front seven. And I think Big Ben's going to be limited in the passing game to an extent. You know, he'll still probably be a top 10, 11 quarterback, but ECR has him number six, and I'm not seeing that.
Yeah, I think anytime you have that complement of weapons, though, that's you're going to put Ben Roethlisberger somewhat in that range. He has Antonio Brown. I'm confident in Ben Roethlisberger this week. I actually have him right around the same range. I have him at five. I know a lot of people are going to be a little bit down on him, but I'm not really overly worried with him. I do find it interesting that against Minnesota that people are a little bit down on Cam Newton, you know, but I guess I'm not buying the narrative about the Eagles defense being some kind of shutdown defense in any way, shape or form. They have a decent pass rush for sure. But as a Philadelphian, I know this defense well, and I know that they can be taken advantage of. Jay Cutler and Brian Hoyer and Robert Griffin, you know, all those guys aren't really a great indication of what we're going to get out of this defense this season. So I'm not as concerned. I can understand the concern, but I'm not as concerned there.
So Jeff, I started building my weekly DraftKings lineup this morning, and I mentioned Dak Prescott. I'm definitely starting him at that price point on DraftKings this week. And if you've been decimated by injuries and you haven't played DraftKings, you can hop over, build a new lineup. And lucky for you, there's over $1 million in total prizes up for grabs this weekend at DraftKings.com, the destination for 1 week fantasy football. That means no season-long commitments. Play when you want with the players you want. Just pick your contest, draft your team, and follow the action live. All you have to do, use the code CARRY at DraftKings.com now and play free with your first deposit. That's CARRY, C-A-R-R-Y, to play free for your share of over $1 million in total prizes this weekend, only at DraftKings.com. Eligibility restrictions may apply. See site for details. Let's jump over and look at the running backs, and we're going to stay out of the top 25 here. Same kind of thing. Everyone's going to be starting those guys, you know, whether it be RB1, RB2, or flex spot. So who's a guy just outside the top 25 maybe that you're just not telling people to start.
Justin Forsett, I'll go off of him. He sticks out to me, even though he's up against Jacksonville now. Jacksonville defense along the front has improved a little bit with Malik Jackson in there. But I'm not sold on Forsett being good at this point in his career. I'm not sold on the Terrence West narrative. And therefore, I've recommended to folks that they run out and pick up Kenneth Dixon before the secret gets out there, because by the end of October, he could be a three-down back.
You don't hear that. You don't hear that term very often in the NFL anymore.
No, and he has the skill set. He certainly did it at the collegiate level. Now, he was in a juiced-up offense, but the guy scored 87 touchdowns in college. I mean, it's no joke. And he was off to a decent preseason. I mean, you don't get very clear news out of, and Baltimore seems to be one of those teams, and we didn't get a lot of clarity as to what was going on there. And you heard the beat writers buzzing about West, but it was really Dixon who probably looked the best out of that group. And so I look at Forsett just on an every week basis as a guy who, you know, he's going to be outside of the top 25 looking in, and not going to be a guy who I'm looking to start.
For me, the guy's Jeremy Hill. I just think against this Denver defense, he's going to be even more touchdown dependent than he typically is. And look, I get it. Jeremy Hill has a lot of talent, but he's clearly the number two back right now behind Giovanni Bernard. And I'm just not seeing it this week against Denver. I've been getting a ton of tweets about, you know, do I start or sit Jeremy Hill and all these other guys. And every single time I can't find myself recommending starting Jeremy Hill.
Yeah, I don't know if he's the clear number two, to be honest. He's the clear number two in the passing game. He's still the lead back in the running game, but the problem is he hasn't been, you know, getting it done there. And obviously this matchup is absolutely brutal. It's brutal across the board. And like you said, though, if you have AJ Green, you're starting AJ Green. You start AJ Green no matter what. You didn't draft him that early to not start him. But you're looking at you look at the running game here. You're downgrading those guys. You look at trying to take a flyer on Brandon LaFell or Tyler Boyd. No, you know, you're downgrading even Andy Dalton, even though he's thrown to AJ Green. It's really a tough one across the board. And this defense, even though they're missing some of the parts from last year, this Denver defense is still just as good. Not having DeMarcus Ware, I know some people are going to make somewhat of a big deal about that, but he was already moved back to more of a situational role anyway. And we've seen a lot of Shane Ray, who was obviously a top draft pick for them 2 years ago. We've seen a lot of him early on in the season. So I don't think they're going to skip a beat. And, you know, they, this defense is just no joke. It really isn't. So it's a tough matchup. I'm with you on Jeremy Hill.
Now, who's one of those running backs outside that you would recommend people to start that you mentioned?
On the outside looking in, you know, I'm kind of intrigued by Shane Vereen a lot. I think, you know, I'm not maybe saying start him. He's all the way back at 38, but I'm saying definitely pick him up if he's available, because Jennings comes in with the consensus at 25. I'm really nervous about that, because he not only did he not look good, but then he hurt his hand. And over the first two games, if you watch them closely, now Vereen got more run in the second game than he did in the first, but Vereen looked really good as a runner, not as just a receiver. We know he's a good receiver, that's fine, but he actually looked good as a runner. That's something I thought we were going to see more out of him when he was in New England. I thought he had a three-down skill set coming into the league. Belichick obviously did not think that, but maybe we'll see a little bit more here. And he's available. He's out there in a lot of standard leagues. In PPR, he's likely owned. But in standard leagues, you could possibly pick him up. And if Jennings, if anything is bad with this hand injury that he has, or if there's a game script that's favorable, more like last week's game script, then possibly we could see more of Vereen. I'm not going to start him this week, but I am going to look to get him on my roster for sure.
I'm a little bit puzzled by Thomas Rawls being at number 33. And people listening to this are probably wondering, which way is he puzzled? Because he was terrible last week. He got taken out of the game with that contusion. But Pete Carroll came out and said it's not really that big of a deal, just a pretty good bruise. And they took him out because they've been easing him back in. But, you know, going up against San Francisco this week, Thomas Rawls has to be above 33, right?
I don't know. I really don't know.
I'm just too optimistic on some players. I really am.
Yeah, it sounds like it in this case. And I know we get the going up against San Francisco, and we saw what Fozzie Whitaker was able to do, but it's a defense that has some surprising talent. It's a defense that's absolutely massive first and foremost, but you have these guys, you have DeForest Buckner there, you have obviously talent at the linebacker position in Navarro Bowman. But I don't know if they're necessarily the pushover matchup that a lot of people are making them out to be. Beyond that, Rawls, Michael, this is just one of those, it looks like it's going to be a much more of a timeshare than maybe a lot of us kind of wanted to see going in here. I still wish CJ Procise didn't get banged up, because I think he has a lot of talent and could be somebody who could possibly take that job and run with it, because neither one of these guys seems to be doing so. I mean, Michael had a good game last week, but we'll see what happens this week. Either way, I'm kind of with that. I do have Michael ahead of Thomas Rawls this week.
I'm just so disgusted that the Seattle backfield with all these really talented runners turned into a timeshare. Like, I just want to see one of these guys get the job and turn into a top 10 running back. I think any of them could do it in that scheme.
Yeah, I don't know how many of them are talented, though. You know, we've seen Christian Michael really flounder over the course of his career, bounced around, finally got back on board here with the Seahawks. Thomas Rawls was an undrafted free agent, and yes, he was magical for 3 weeks last year, but that's an extremely small sample size. He was great when he was a starter. I guess you could say he started 6 games last year in total. But, I don't know how talented those guys actually are, and it's tough when you compare them up against an immensely talented player in Marshawn Lynch. But that's why I was so excited about Procise, because, maybe not pure talent as a runner, because that's not his background, but just super athletic and big and, does a lot of the things that you want. And then plus his ability as a receiver, he has a lot of overlap in his skill set with David Johnson. And, that was what was most exciting, but he just kept getting derailed with those injuries, and then having a hand injury as a pass catching running back is just not an ideal thing.
720 yards in those 6 starts, by the way. I know there were a couple big kind of fluky games in there, but 720 in 6 starts. I just can't help but believe that Rawls really has something good in him.
Yeah, we also saw Bryce Brown go absolutely ballistic for a couple games for the Eagles.
You're exactly right. So. Even Peyton Hillis for 1 year, and then he was just kind of a turd.
Hey, got the Madden cover.
Yeah, you're right. All right, moving over to wide receiver. Who's a guy that's right on the borderline that you're excited about this week?
So are we going 3 deep then? So like 35, 36, something like that?
Yeah, let's shoot for about that.
Yeah, Devontae Parker is going to be that guy. He's at 40 right now, and I think he could be a wide receiver 2 this week in this matchup. We saw not only was it the high ceiling that you got out of Parker, but the fact that he saw 11 targets. Now, keep in mind, Pro Football Focus, we independently chart targets. So sometimes I'll say target numbers and I'll have people go after me on Twitter like, you said it was 9 targets, but it was actually 10 targets. Well, we don't count throwaways as targets. The NFL numbers that you see like on box scores over, throughout the webs, the websites out there, they count throwaways as targets. We don't. So that's why our target numbers are always just slightly lower than others out there, but still got up over double digit targets, flashed that ceiling. And this guy coming into the league, let's not forget the pedigree here, an early first round pick, a guy who just oozes that wide receiver 1 profile, the size, the speed, the ability to play above the rim, all those things that you want. And he's much more profiled as a wide receiver 1 than Jarvis Landry. And Jarvis Landry is a fantastic football player. Nothing wrong with him whatsoever. But, he's more of that possession receiver who can run after the catch a little bit, but doesn't have that elite wide receiver 1 kind of look to him from, from a fantasy perspective. PPR, though, keep in mind, obviously Jarvis Landry sees such a heavy volume of targets that he's a wide receiver 1 in that format. But I love me some Devontae Parker. He was my top waiver ad this week. And I thoroughly believe that we saw the emergence last week. He blew past Kenny Stills on the depth chart, and that's going to just continue to roll. And he's going to be he's a player who a lot of people like to break out in early on in the preseason process, or the offseason process, I should say. preseason kind of derailed that those hopes for a lot of people, but I think he's right back on track.
For me, it's Michael Thomas. This guy looked pretty good. He was the only guy who really looked very good in that sloppy Giant Saints game. He looks like he's finally healthy, and this was a guy that was getting a lot of hype in the preseason, and for good reason. He's super talented. He's going up against Atlanta at home, and I think that he jumps into a flex-worthy play this week. I really like Michael Thomas for the Saints.
Yeah, he is a very talented receiver and gets overlooked a little bit because of obviously the big performances by Willie Snead and Brandon Cooks over the first 2 weeks here. But you look at Thomas, I'm very glad that my perspective was right. I'm always glad when I'm right, but people were saying, oh, Marcus Colston. I'm like, no, Demaryius Thomas. He's Demaryius Thomas. That is what he is. He is Demaryius Thomas. He plays on the outside. He can run after the catch. He's got a lot of size. He's got ability that is a very different skill set than Marcus Colston. He's not a big slot. You look at it through the first 2 weeks of the season, the slot receiver is Willie Snead. 72% of his routes have come out of the slot, just 8% for Michael Thomas. I agree with you. I had him as a top waiver ad this week, so he'd be right. He'd kind of be right behind. So if you looked at the top guys this week for me, it was Parker and Tyrell Williams. Anunua there too for PPR, but doesn't have that upside of even Michael Thomas. I think Michael Thomas's ceiling is potentially a lot higher than Anunua. Anunua is a darn good football player, though. Boy, has he come a long way. But I like Michael Thomas a lot. And I think it's only going to improve for him as he gets more comfortable in this offense.
Demaryius Thomas, that is a great comp. Do you think that he can end up being a possession hog like Demaryius Thomas?
Yeah, potentially down the road. Now, obviously, you know, they're set up with some young receivers here because, you know, Cooks early on in his career, Snead early on in his career. So it's really going to depend on how things shake out. And obviously, you have Drew Brees at the end of his career here, too. But he profiles more as that wide receiver one type than the other two. Cooks has a lot of upside, but and he showed that he can be a wide receiver one last year. But, you know, the smaller receiver, more of the speed guy, he could be the field stretcher. Snead can play in the slot, and Thomas can profile as, yeah, that target monster potentially.
Now, I've got to ask you this, Jeff, because I know you watch a lot of film. With these young Saints wide receivers, I mean, whoever takes over for Drew Brees, if he ever retires, that is, has a stacked receiver core. But I'm curious, if they were playing for a team like the Bears, if they traded wide receiver cores, how would these guys stack up in fantasy? Are they really that good, or is it just a product of being on Drew Brees' team?
Cooks is really good. Cooks is a very good player. And you know, he's a kid who came from a smaller school, somewhat smaller school, you know, not an SEC guy or anything like that. And then, you know, Thomas obviously coming from a massive school, he's a good football player as well. I think if you put anybody on those sorts of teams, it takes a really special talent to stand out, though. Somebody, you know, in the realm of Antonio Brown and Julio Jones and Odell Beckham are those types of players. So it's tough because the game is so much about situations and circumstances and opportunities. And, you know, we even see it right now. I made this comment the other day, but you look at somebody like D'Angelo Williams, who's obviously a fantastic football player, especially to be doing what he's doing at his age. But it's a big part of it is the fact that he doesn't come off the field. You know, he's leading the league right now in carries and targets among running backs.
Wow.
That's insane. Well, he's tied at targets, but still, you know, 14 targets through two games, 58 carries. I mean, it's absolutely nuts. And it sucks for D'Angelo Williams owners because that's done after this week. You know, that's Le'Veon Bell is going to do. There's no timeshare. It's not going to happen. It didn't happen last year. It's not happening this year. But my main point, though, is what could have been for D'Angelo Williams if he was in a situation similar to this earlier on in his career? I mean, it could have been a much different trajectory.
Could have been a superstar.
Yeah, and he was briefly, you know, he was a fantasy superstar way back in 2008. And then it was, you know, him and Jonathan Stewart forever. And we even seen Jonathan Stewart, too, without D'Angelo there had, you know, obviously a pretty decent year last year and now, of course, injured. But, you know, either way, it's always a matter of location, location, location. And obviously these three receivers in New Orleans are in the right location.
Jeff, before we jump over to the listener mailbag, let's go to the flip side of this and look at wide receivers that were low on this week. I'm going to start with Mike Wallace for Baltimore. He's got 12 targets so far, and he's made the most of them, but I'm not seeing this keeping up. I think there's going to be a lot of regression, and, you know, it might not happen this week, but I'm not ranking him as high as 34, which is where ECR has him.
Yeah, I certainly agree with you there. Right now I have him at 52. So that should tell you how I feel about
him. I'm so glad to hear that, Jeff, because I really respect your opinion, man.
It's the four targets that really does it for me. And we knew this. We knew that while and people didn't want to believe it, that after finishing 74th among wide receivers in scoring last year, that he wasn't done. But we knew he wasn't done. I mean, he was okay in Miami. It was still fantasy worthy in Miami. It was just the fact that he played on that team last year that really hurt him. He's a nine route receiver on a team that doesn't throw the ball deep. I mean, of course he's not going to have fantasy points. This year, he's got one of the biggest arms in the league throwing to him. So that bodes well, but he's going to be boom or bust. And the target volume is the big thing. We saw Dennis Pitta go out, get 11 targets last week. We saw Breshad Perriman get more targets than Mike Wallace last week. So, and heavily targeted downfield, by the way. The Perriman breakout is coming. I don't know when it's going to happen. If I did, I'd probably, you know, I'd be in those big contests, PFS contests, like my man Al Zeidenfeld winning that big contest. But either way, you know, I just, with the target volume, that's really key for me. I think you're fine if you want to start him as a wide receiver five, if you're in that deep of a league, but to think of him as a wide receiver three this week is really pushing it.
Is there another wide receiver that you're seeing that you're not very high on?
You know, in this list, there are some guys who kind of are interesting here. I just want to say real quick too, and I hope people listen to this before that game. Julian Edelman's at number 33. Julian Edelman could have snaps at quarterback this week. Okay, if the Patriots don't sign anybody and they go into the game with Jacoby Brissett, Julian Edelman is the backup quarterback.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and that almost means that you absolutely have to start him, even though Jacoby Brissett is at quarterback. He could rack up some crazy points. It'd be almost unprecedented thing in fantasy for that to happen. But he's 33 on this list. That just feels like a little bit too low. You know, some of the guys though, I'm looking at. Right now, boy, I mean, most of this list is relatively good. I was going to say where's Stephon Diggs, but he's at 20. He's right where he should be. The one guy who I think a lot of people are, I'll go to the other side of that game. So coming in at 30 is Will Fuller. And I do have just a little bit of concern about Fuller because he's off to such a hot start that my concern is that expectations for him are just going to keep getting larger and larger and larger. And we have to remember that he is a rookie. And I still think that of this year's rookies, just for this year, not for Dynasty, but just this year, I still think Sterling Shepard is the best option. And, you know, Fuller's going to have some big plays, and certainly he's shown that already. But there is a point where he comes back to earth, and maybe that point is this week. You know, a lot of times what New England will do with their coverage is they will say, all right, because New England always shadows. They always shadow Malcolm Butler shadows. But what they'll do is sometimes they'll put Malcolm Butler on the number two so he doesn't shadow DeAndre Hopkins. And then what they'll do, then they'll have Logan Ryan shadowing and the safety help from Devin McCourty helping out there. So they're basically bracketing DeAndre Hopkins. That could happen this week, and Malcolm Butler is really good at football, so that could slow down Will Fuller a little bit. I mean, Will Fuller is dynamic, blazing fast, but I feel like the bottom drops out one of these weeks, and our expectations aren't met, so it could be this week.
I definitely agree. 30 is way too high. I kind of skipped over him when I was prepping for this, but I don't have him in my top 40, let alone top 30.
I have him just outside the wide receiver three, so he's in the top 40 just because of that upside. But yeah, I agree with you. It's definitely too high to have him at 30.
All right, let's jump over to the listener mailbag. First question from Pat in Tennessee. Should I accept the trade offer, Le'Veon Bell for Odell Beckham Jr.?
Boy, it's hard to analyze trades without knowing the entire, you know, set of the offense. So if you're getting Le'Veon Bell for Beckham, it's super tough because those two are both elite fantasy options. And as I said, you know, Bell, when he comes back in, he's the bell cow, and, you know, no pun intended or pun intended, whatever you want to take it as, he's that guy in this offense. So if you need running back help, then absolutely do it. If you're stacked at wide receiver, if you know, you have some running backs and you're a little thin at wide receiver, you keep Odell Beckham Jr. You know, that's sort of how I approach those. I don't think I can give a definitive answer without knowing the entire team, though.
I think that's fair. When I read this question, my immediate thought was, there's no way I'm trading Beckham Jr. He averages over 100 yards per game in his career.
Yeah. Le'Veon Bell is, you know, in a year where it's already seeming like running back is going to be difficult, Le'Veon Bell, when healthy, is really the clear number one running back, though.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you're right.
I can understand why the trade question would exist.
Greg from New Mexico, defensive touchdowns seem to be so random. How can I better predict these so that I can best stream streaming defenses?
Greg, if you figure that one out, you tell me. Here's basically how I go about it. And it is a very tough thing. Certain teams will have a little bit more upside than others. And you're talking just defense, not obviously special teams touchdowns. That's a different beast entirely. But some teams have more dynamic players. I mean, you look to a team, obviously, like Denver, who has the dynamic players, or, you know, even Minnesota, surprisingly enough, in week one, scoring those two touchdowns. And it wasn't sort of some of the dynamic guys. I mean, Kendricks is a solid linebacker, obviously a rising talent, but it wouldn't have been my first pick to take one to the house. But he did that. And then Daniil Hunter did the same thing. It's a challenging thing, but basically, when you try to predict stuff like touchdowns, you really need to link those to other stats. So what's the relationship between defensive touchdowns and defensive takeaways, really, is the question that I always ask. And then, so can we figure out what teams are forcing and recovering more fumbles, what teams are intercepting the ball more frequently? And then there is going to be a rate at which those are going to get returned for touchdowns. Now, obviously, it's a rate. It's not going to give you any sort of 100% accuracy. But based on those, then you can really you can get a sense of who to sort of go after. But that's sort of the problem, though. You know, defensive scoring is broken. Kicking scoring is broken. Why do we go to fractional points for yards? So you get 0.1 for a yard. But if Steven Gostkowski kicks a 44-yard field goal, I don't get 4.4 points. Like, that's stupid to me. Why haven't we gone to fractional? Why are we still stuck in 1982 with kicking? And defense is broken as well, because it's a system that rewards defenses for scoring touchdowns. But last I checked, the defenses that are the best defenses out there, it's not about them scoring touchdowns. It's about them getting sacks. It's about them holding their opponents to fewer points, fewer yards. You know, there's a huge problem with that. And I'm a big advocate, even though I'm somebody who plays in IDP, I'm a huge advocate of defense special teams, because it's a way for folks to look to the other side of the ball and start paying attention to what happens on the defensive side. Because, you know, a lot of folks, when they watch football, and it's fine, you know, I did this for a long time too. You watch the ball, where's the ball? But there's 22 people on the field, and there's infinitely more than 22 different things going on every single different play. And that's what makes this game so amazing. So, long rant off the side here about team defense, but it's really difficult to predict those touchdowns. You just kind of want to look for the most turnovers, or takeaways, I should say. And that's sort of your best approach there, Greg.
For those of you listening, Jeff is really good at IDP. He posts his rankings, and I play in an IDP league. It's the first place I look. I would recommend checking them out on profootballfocus.com. Great stuff. They watch a ton of film over there, and they know the defensive players as well as anybody. And I mean anybody. Greg, to answer your question, I think a lot of it comes down to who's going to have a big lead, because the other team's going to be passing from behind a ton. You're going to be sitting back in coverage and get a lot of interceptions. And with, like you said, with interceptions comes touchdowns. So I look at a team like New England who, you know, this week, they're not probably going to be up because, like we already mentioned, their quarterback situation. But just look at the spreads. If you're looking for a defensive touchdown, I tend to go with those guys, even if they don't have the best defenses, just because a lot of times they're going to get those weak takeaways at the end of the game. Next question, Jack from Oklahoma. With Abdullah on injured reserve, is Theo Riddick a top 20 running back?
It's going to be close. You know, this week, that's exactly where I put him. My concern and the problem with looking at these sorts of things is we don't know exactly how the coaching staff is going to adjust. We can see in-game adjustments, like, for example, Carolina in-game adjustment, go to Fozzie Whitaker. Fozzie Whitaker has a big game. But Cameron Artis Payne wasn't dressed for that game. So what would have happened if he wasn't dressed? And by the way, people today, oh, well, he stinks then if he wasn't dressed. No, he doesn't play special teams. That's why he wasn't dressed. But in this case, he's going to see the receiving volume for sure. That's not going to change. The role doesn't change there. The question is how much early down work does he get? And at this point, you know, entering this week, I have him ranked 20 right now in the first pass in my rankings. So top 20, I guess, yes, barely, but that could change dramatically if we see a lot more Washington on early downs than we are initially anticipating. But for right now, if I, you know, gun to my head, I'd say yes, barely a top 20 running back.
Kevin from Washington, should I drop Bilal Powell, Derrick Henry, Michael Thomas, or Kevin White?
Well, why we're always wanting to drop people, right? We're always wanting to drop people. And you know, you look at Bilal Powell, why did you draft him? You didn't draft him to be a starter. You drafted him to be a handcuff. So why would you drop him? Same thing with Derrick Henry. We know he was going to get some run. And actually, his touches, his early down touches increased just a little bit in week two. But he's really, again, he's the handcuff there. Michael Thomas, we just talked about him. His arrow's pointing up. I'm not dropping him. And I thought, you know, for Kevin White, he looked a little out of sorts at times on Monday night, but there were also some times where, you know, something happened, you know, I look up, I'm like, wait, who was that? Oh, it was Kevin White. Okay. All right. We're moving along here. All right. You know, I don't see dropping these guys. And this is a tendency of fantasy players every year. In week two, you want to freak out and drop players and ask the guy who dropped Odell Beckham Jr. 2 years ago. You know, ask the guy who dropped David Johnson last year. How'd they like that? And I'm not saying any of these guys are David Johnson or Odell Beckham Jr., but really, we're finally into the regular season. The first 2 weeks of the regular season are really the last 2 weeks of the preseason. You know, it's teams shaking the rust off. The guys are playing for four quarters finally. And it's not the same type of football that you're going to see. Plus, the weather is beautiful everywhere, pretty much. It's all warm. It's not the same type of football you're going to see throughout the course of the season. So exercise patience. If you're going to make moves on these guys, unless you said, should I drop Kevin White for Devontae Parker? Okay, yes, I would do that. But otherwise, are you just dropping them to drop them? No. I mean, sit on these guys, see what you have after the first month, and look at the season as those chunks. You have 4 week chunks and evaluate after this first month and see what we have with these guys.
Jeff, I'm really disappointed you gave that answer, because my plan was to let you answer the question and then just come in and blast it all off. Like, don't drop any of these guys for the same exact reasons you said. What do you think was going to happen? Did you think Matt Forte was going to get hurt in the first 2 weeks and then you'd have Bilal Powell, and if not, you just drop him? And it doesn't make any sense to me. All four of these guys are better than virtually anyone available in 50% of leagues. I'd hang on to every single one of them. Final question, Tyler from Massachusetts. My team is decimated by injuries, so I'm projected to lose by 20. This is an interesting question, by the way. Should I stream risky upside players like a Tavon Austin or Dwayne Washington and start them this week? Or should I go with the more consistent guys like Sproles, Steve Smith?
Well, I'm not picking up, or if Tavon Austin's out there, I'm notoriously on the opposite side of the Tavon Austin support camp. I don't really like him as a fantasy option. He's a guy who didn't even go for 500 receiving yards last year. But Dwayne Washington, you pick him up. He's not a streamer. You pick him up and see what you have after this week. Sproles is really intriguing. And here's something that's flying under the radar that I don't think is getting talked about enough. Sproles out-carried Ryan Matthews. Now, everybody's looking at Matthews as a fantasy asset. Oh, he scored 2 touchdowns. Yeah, it's great. He had 9 carries. Sproles had 12. Sproles, the 5'6" Darren Sproles, was running between the tackles more than Ryan Matthews was. So I think that's interesting to keep monitoring, because obviously he's going to have a role as a receiver. And it sounds like Doug Peterson really likes him. You know, Steve Smith, I mean, I guess if you're asking Tavon Austin or Steve Smith, I'm going Steve Smith. I'm just not that crazy about his upside at advanced age, coming back from the bad injury with a lot of mouths to feed in that passing game now with Dennis Pitta emerging, with Aiken there, with Brashad Perryman. It's a limited fantasy profile, so I can kind of understand why you're projected to lose by that much. If you can make any moves, then go for it and try and get some more upside there. Otherwise, pick up Dwayne Washington. Hopefully he turns into something.
I like upside. I like the strategy of picking up big upside guys if you're projected to lose by a ton. But I think Steve Smith has more upside than Tavon Austin. And we've seen him go off for big games. Tavon Austin had like 2 good games in his career. Besides that, he's not been a good fantasy asset. So, man, what you mentioned about Darren Sproles out carrying Ryan Matthews, that scared me to death when I saw that, because I've got Ryan Matthews in a bunch of leagues, and that is not good news.
Definitely is not good news. We're still getting used to this Eagles team too. We got to figure out exactly how they're going to do things. And you know, sometimes it's just, you know, 1 week can just be an anomaly. It could be a game plan, but if we see it again, 2 weeks in a row, now the Eagles have early bye, but 2 weeks in a row, I'd be really concerned as a Matthews owner.
All right, let's do start, sit, and we're going to blow through this section because we're kind of running out of time, but I'm going to give you 4 names that are right on the borderline. And Jeff, you have to start 2 and sit 2. Let's start at quarterback. Russell Wilson face San Francisco. I already know how you feel about that. Derek Carr face Tennessee. Dak Prescott face Chicago. And Jameis Winston face Los Angeles Rams.
Yeah, sitting Winston. It's close to the others. I'm going to start Russell Wilson. I do think Dak's kind of sneaky, so I'll start him. And I like Carr this week, and I don't think – defensive front, I guess, is probably what puts it over the top, though, for Tennessee. They have a decent defensive front, so I would sit Carr.
I was going to go with – I thought it was going to be sneaky for me to go with Russell Wilson and Dak Prescott, but that's who I'm going with too. And it's weird that we have the same answer on that one, because a lot of people are saying, what, over Derek Carr? But yeah. Yeah, against those Bears, I'm starting Dak in that scenario. Running back, Carlos Hyde face Seattle. Jerick McKinnon at Carolina. Jamaal Charles, who they're saying is going to play, face the Jets. And Jay Ajayi face Cleveland.
Wow, this is some brutal choices.
It's horrible, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I guess based on volume, projected volume that these guys are going to see, I'm going to go with Hyde versus the Seahawks. That's how bad this is. And McKinnon versus the Panthers, I think those are the guys who see the most work. I'm a little concerned with Charles in the first week, and plus that Jets defense. That's a defense that only gave up 2 rushing touchdowns to opposing running backs last year. And they're pretty good out the gate already here. So I would definitely not want to roll with Charles, and I can't trust Ajayi. He might not even out carry Kenyon Drake in this game.
Yeah, you're right about that. And everyone who listens to this knows that I love Jerick McKinnon. I draft him in virtually every league. I've been recommending him, but I'm not starting him against Carolina's defense, especially with what they're saying with the splits and the goal line carries. I'm going with Ajayi here over both McKinnon and Charles, just purely on upside alone. He's going against the Browns defense. The Browns defense. Every single time that someone played the Browns last year, we thought they were going to go off for 150 yards, and a lot of times they did. So, you know, even if he gets 10 carries, I like Ajayi quite a bit. So those are my 2. And then finally, let's look at wide receiver. Mike Wallace at Jacksonville. Devontae Parker face Cleveland. Corey Coleman at Miami. And Dante Moncrief. We're going to skip that one because he's hurt now.
Yeah, I guess we could toss Dorsett in.
Yeah, let's go Dorsett. Right. Face San Diego.
Yeah, it's going to be Parker and Dorsett. You got to figure it's going to be interesting to see if Jason Verrett actually follows T.Y. Hilton in the slot. But
I can't imagine he does.
That means Dorsett's probably going to see some Jason Verrett, and Verrett did pretty well last week against the Jags. But still, I do like that. I do like the play because there's some upside there. So Corey Coleman, I love Corey Coleman as a player. I just can't trust his quarterback situation. And then, like I said, Mike Wallace, the target volume is a little concerning. So I'll go Parker and Dorsett.
Here's my answer. I do think Dorsett's going to be covered by Verrett. I'm going Parker and drop. Just don't drop the rest of the guys, but pick somebody else up. Those other three options are horrible this week. I don't like them. I would have said Moncrief if he had been healthy, but you know, I'm just not sure with Dorsett, with Hilton being in the slot and Dorsett being the main guy outside. I just can't see it. All right, we're going to wrap this up with top performers of the week. And again, it's going to be a quick little segment here. We're going to predict who's going to finish as the top performers at each position, top fantasy scores. And sometimes these are going to be bold predictions rather than just our top ranked guy. So here's my quarterback. It's Matt Ryan. You know, we already talked about how Matt Ryan, you know, might be overrated right now, but he's playing great football and he's going up against that Saints defense. It's in the dome. So I'm going Matt Ryan here. I'm going out a little bit. He's the number five ECR, and I'm not going to rank him number one, but I think he does have the upside to finish number one this week.
Well, let's go to the other side of that one then, and I'll go with Drew Brees.
Yeah.
we talked about him earlier. We like the talent around him, and obviously indoors is good. On the road, not so good for Drew Brees. But even if the guy plays in, you know, on the road indoors, I'm actually kind of happy about that. But doesn't have that problem this week. We know what he does at home. Drew Brees for me.
Running back, this is where I'm going for a real stretch. I'm going for the home run here with Charles Sims at home against the Rams. I think a lot of things line up. We know Martin's going to be out. I think Sims can handle a lot of touches. He's going to get the passes. The game script's positive. They're going to be running the ball a lot. And I could see Sims having a huge week.
Certainly the possibility. We got to see if he does run in early downs. Don't overlook Peyton Barber if he's actually active. A lot of people don't even know that name, but could possibly get some early down work if he's active. You know, two guys that stand out. If I wanted to be bold, I could certainly be bold and go Melvin Gordon, but I think I'm going to go safer here, and I'm going to just ride this one last week of D'Angelo Williams into the sunset.
Yeah, especially against that Eagles defense. I think you kind of have to. He's my number one ranked guy, even over David Johnson. Against that Phillies rushing defense, it's going to be a beautiful thing. I can't wait to see how many yards he piles up. All right, wide receiver. I know he started off slow, and I know he's got a rookie quarterback, but Dez Bryant. I already talked about how that Chicago Bears secondary is just in pieces right now, and I think Dez breaks out and has a big game here.
Yeah, this is where I'm going to go bold. So I went safer at running back. I'm going to say Marvin Jones. And the reason why I'm saying that is because he's tied for second among wide receivers in targets so far. This is a game script that figures to be favorable for Lions passing, because I think they get down early and they got to keep, you know, punching out of the corner. And obviously Stafford has this chemistry with Jones now. Could be in store for another big week. And, you know, for me, kind of sneaky. I have him as a sneaky top 10 guy this week, just based on the volume he's seeing.
And then finally, tight end. Usually this is the non-Gronk tight end, but he's going to be out again in week three is what it sounded like. So I'm going with Delanie Walker. It's kind of more of a chalk pick, ECR number two, but he's going up against Oakland at home. They don't really have anyone else to pass to. I'm not a big believer in Tajay Sharpe yet. And Oakland last season was just terrible against tight end. So I think he has a big game here for us.
Tough matchup against Slay last week for Sharp, though. So I think he does rebound. But I'm going to go Gates. Gates against allegedly the Colts have a defense. So I don't know if they're going to. But yeah, Gates still going to see a lot of targets there. And you know, I think that this is a weird game. It's like you have two potentially really potent offenses against two really bad defenses. So that typically means good things for fantasy scoring.
That's a great pick. Jeff, I really appreciate all your answers today. You had some great insight. Fun talking to you, and looking forward to doing it again sometime.
Absolutely.
All right. Take care. And that's all we have for the show this time. We've got another show coming out this week, late Thursday night, so you can listen to it on your Friday morning commute. We're going to be talking about DFS so you can prep for your DraftKings lineup. Next week, we've got three more shows coming. If you're liking the show and you haven't already, please do us a favor and subscribe on iTunes, rate and review us. Really helps us out. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your football. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve. Street.
Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way.
It's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Fire the grill and fire up the party. Get the Weber Searwood Pellet Grill. Smoke, roast, and sear on the same grill. Go from low and slow on smoke boost mode at 180 degrees all the way to high heat sear at 600 degrees. It's got a full grate sear zone so you can put more food on the flame. Food will look as good as it tastes. This grill is hot in 15 minutes and cleanup is easy. You can also add a heavy-duty rotisserie or rust-resistant griddle insert to up your game. Get fired up for your new Weber Searwood Pellet Grill.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.